I will continue now with the transcendental dependent arising, where I stopped with the fourth meditative absorption and mentioned to you that the next four are extensions of that one. Now, again, to make it quite clear, maybe I will repeat that these first four that I was talking about, naturally, start with the first one. If you get a decidedly pleasant body feeling, that is piti or priti, and that is the entry into samatha, into calm. That is the entry into the five factors of the first absorption, which I explained yesterday. And they are the initial application, which is what you do when you get at the meditation subject, and the sustained application, which means you can stay on it, the pleasant feeling, which is the priti or the piti. I'll stay with the Pali because I'm used to Pali, piti. And then a certain happiness arises with it, and one-pointedness. This is why I was stressing one-pointedness this time when we were going through. Because also, maybe you noticed, if you put your attention on both feet, and one is over on this, on the right, and one is over on the left, and you feel as if you're going from here to there and here to there, if you put your full attention on the sensation, and you're one-pointed on the sensation, there is no over here and over there. There's just sensation. And this is the secret of becoming concentrated and absorbed. To be one-pointed on whatever it is one is using. It doesn't have to be the sensation. But seeing that the first meditative absorption concerns sensation, this is an easy entry, because piti is a sensation. The fourth one is a difficult one to get into, because it requires that even the one who is the observer lets go for that time and becomes the experiencer. Now, we usually have an experience and an observer. And the observer is still part of our ego concept. But to get into a deep concentration, into the meditative absorption, which is absolute peace and absolute equanimity, it is necessary to have only the experiencer. So there is a very important and great step necessary to let go. There are extensions to this fourth one. And the first one of those is called the base of infinite space. The word itself brings hardly any meaning to it. But what happens in this particular absorption is that it appears as if the body limits the outline of the body is so enlarged that it loses itself into infinity. In other words, there is no personal body to be found. It is very often a gradual process of expansion, but it can also be an immediate process, either way. Here we have a distinctive observer. The next three absorptions are very much for insight. They are the, I should say, the pleasant way to gain insight. The gradual expansion or the immediate expansion are both possibilities and make no difference, but the result is that all that is in the awareness, in the consciousness, is infinity of space. And within that infinity of space, no personal body nor other bodies can be found. The correlation between this first one of the arupas, the non-material absorptions, to the rupas, rupajanas, the material absorptions, the fine material absorptions, the correlation is that in the very first one, it concerns sensations arising from the body. Here it concerns expansion arising from the body. There are only two things in the universe, mind and matter, nama, rupa. That's all there is.
Rupa, what is?
Rupa is matter,
yeah.
Corporality.
Yeah. The other one?
Nama. And within those two, it is either the one or the other that we are concerned with. So in the very first instance, in the first jhana, and here in the fifth one, it is concerning the body. But it is concerning this body in a totally different manner than what we're used to. We're used to having to look after this body. We're used to having to deal with it, with its many aches and pains, with its desires, with its needs. It does have needs. It also has lots of desires because of the mind being interested in the contact. So we don't deal with that here. What we deal with is, in this case, a complete loss of it. And this gives rise to the insight automatically, without even giving any deliberate attention to it, that there is one whole. And it can be likened to something like this, which may arise or not, that within the spaciousness of infinity, as if it were an ocean in infinity, and out of that ocean arise little bubbles. And these little bubbles, of course, disappear into the ocean again, but during the time that they have arisen, they get the idea that they are individuals. They forget completely that all that was happening is that they arose from this ocean and are going to go right back into it. And they think that they are beautiful, clever, stupid, that they're better than somebody else, that they know more, that they know less, all sorts of things. One will say to the other, look at me, I'm so big. The other one will say, but look at me, I'm so pretty. And in reality, these are bubbles arising out of this immense ocean and, of course, immediately falling back into it, just like bubbles always do. So in this infinity of space, nothing can be found except space. And that realization comes that the idea of a personal body and the idea of all sorts of personal bodies, whether they are human beings or animals, whether they are trees or flowers or rocks or anything at all, is nothing but a mental illusion. It is not an optical illusion. With our physical eye, we see all these separate bubbles. But mentally, we completely deluded, thinking that these are actualities, realities. They are nothing but having arisen from craving to be. Having experienced a space in which there is nothing, especially not me, because the whole thing revolves around me, that realization arises automatically. That there is a whole, but there aren't actually any separations. Out of that whole, some things arise and disappear again into that whole. Whole with a W in front. Difficult to pronounce. This infinity of space is not described by the Buddha other than calling it the infinity of space, which again gives rise to the thought that either everybody could do it in those days in India that was interested in meditation, or that the instructions were lost. It is a constant refrain. He mentions all eight of the absorptions in all discourses concerned with either meditative procedure or particularly with the procedure to get to liberation. The next step, the next absorption, is called the infinity of consciousness. And again, there's a correlation to the second jhana in the fine material sphere. The second jhana in the fine material sphere changed from the physical aspect of the sensation to the emotional aspect of joy, happiness. Whereas here, we're changing from the physical aspect of complete expansion to the mental aspect of an infinity of consciousness in which there is no personal consciousness to be found. Both arise simultaneously, just as they do in the first and second jhana. In the first and second jhana, the joy arises simultaneously with the pleasant feeling. It is impossible not to have happiness when you feel very well and very pleasant. The same, it is impossible to be aware of infinity of space if there is no infinity of consciousness. So both arise together. And in order to get from one to the other, it is just a matter of turning one's attention away from one and turning it to the other. And this is a very important aspect of the practice that leads to liberation. It is turning one's attention away from worldly matters and turning it towards that which is the unconditioned, the liberating freedom. Both are available to us in our consciousness, and as we learn to do it in the meditation, to turn ourselves away from that which is definitely impeding and destroying and disturbing, and turn it towards that which is peaceful and wholesome, we learn to change our attention from one to the other. We need not continue to be attentive to that which brings no results to us other than worldly results. When we have the experience of an infinity of space, we naturally must have the infinity of consciousness in order to know it. So turning to that infinity of consciousness, we realize, after having done it, that there is no personal consciousness. There is no such thing as me. There is nobody there that has a separate mind and body. These are all the bubbles arising out of craving that they want to be and disappearing again. And while they have arisen, they think that they are me. When there is that consciousness expansion, it also sometimes appears as if it starts from one's own mind and goes outward. These are just appearances, of course. It may be also immediate. There may be an immediate expansion. This immediate expansion is more likely because the infinity of spaces has already happened. When we are aware of this infinity of consciousness, it is an experience which not only brings this result, which is afterwards, but it is an experience of not being burdened with personality, not being burdened with the ego concept, not having to be, having to achieve, having to do, having to know, having to become, all these things that we think we have to do. That all disappears at that time completely, because the expansion of the consciousness leaves no room for any personal concept, idea, desire. In other words, all there is awareness, but it isn't mine. In some cases, people do get to the arupa jhanas without having traversed the rupa jhanas. They get to the non-material absorptions without having gone through the fine material absorptions. This does happen. It's rare, and those people usually can go back then and do the others. So there are people who do experience this expansion without having experienced the other steps which I outlined earlier. The next step in this progression is that it's also a very natural one, just like the correlation again in the fine material absorptions, where when one has had pleasant feelings, have been very happy, one is naturally then contented. It's a natural progression. Here we have a natural progression to the base of nothingness. It's a description that says nothing. But it does mean something. And nothingness is often totally misunderstood. And in this particular instance, we can have a simile like this. When we come into this hall, we see a lot of pillows, we see a lot of people, we see a lot of things on the shrine, and a lot of material aspects are here. Then somebody comes along and cleans the whole place out, and we come in. There's nothing in here. There's nothing in here, but there is space. And in that space, there's nothing. But that doesn't mean that we see nothing. We know that there's nothing here. It's not that we've stopped knowing. So here, when we get to the base of nothingness, it's a natural progression from having experienced infinite space, infinite consciousness. We realize that within this spaciousness that we're experiencing, within this ultimate consciousness that we're experiencing here, that there is absolutely nothing to hang on to. It is empty of any phenomena. There is nothing there that we can hold on to, that can give us security, that we can't grab a star and say, this one's mine, and then rest on it. There is absolutely emptiness. This is in this particular meditation experience. The room has been emptied out. We find a totality of existence in which nothing particular is to be found that we can say, it's me, it's mine, I want it, I'll have it, I'll keep it. None of that. So possibly the simile of the room that has been emptied out gives an idea. Naturally, one has to bite into the mango to know the taste of the mango, but at least it may give an idea. These three are natural progressions, and once the mind has become concentrated enough to go into the absorptions, these are natural follow-ups. The next one, the eighth one, is again difficult like the fourth one and has a great correlation to it. The fourth one is total peacefulness. And the eighth one is neither perception nor non-perception, which also tells nothing. But what it is all about is that the mind stops perceiving even peacefulness, but remains awake and remains alert to being peaceful. So it is a state where the peacefulness of the fourth absorption is still surpassed, because in the fourth absorption there is the perception of peace, whereas in the eighth one there isn't even the perception of peace, but there is peace. That's about twice as much as what the Buddha said about it. And about all one can say about it. The difficulty which lie in both of these, in the fourth and the eighth, is the fact that one really has to give oneself up. And this is the difficulty of reaching liberation. So these are excellent preconditions for liberation. They are by no means liberation. The ego re-arises after one comes out of this meditation. But they are excellent preconditions, because in order to get into the fourth jhana, it is necessary, in order to use a simile, to be willing to drown. To drown in that peace, which is possible to attain, but only possible to attain if there is nobody that wants to be that peace. One has to give oneself completely up, one has to give oneself completely away, one has to let go of all preconceived notions, what there I am, what I will be, what I could be, what I'm going to be, and what I'm going to have, and so forth. This total giving up, being able to let go of this hanging on to body and mind, is a necessary condition to go into fourth and also eighth absorption. They are also necessary preconditions for even getting an inkling of what it's all about when we talk about Nibbana. To get to go this pathway along the eight absorptions is an excellent training for the mind to have the capacity for one-pointedness, which is essential in order to reach any kind of past moment, and the training for the ability to let go of the I, the me consciousness. Although in all these absorptions, even in the eighth, there is someone who is experiencing this. It has to be so minute, it has to be given up to such an extent that it already gives one a glimpse what it means to let go completely. Letting go completely is, of course, another step. When the Buddha did these absorptions, and when he learned them from his two teachers, he realized that when he came out of them, that dukkha was again there, that the ego returned. So he realized that there was something more to be done. And that was his contribution to, and the innovation that he brought to the whole of this spiritual path, which meditatively already existed in India and had been existing for quite about 2,500 years before the Buddha, there are records of it. So the innovation and the uniqueness of his teaching lies in the fact that the eight absorptions are the path, but not the end. Because in those days, and still today, having come to an experience of neither perception nor non-perception, brings the idea of having reached such a high state of purification and realization that nothing else needs to be done. But that is a total misconception. And in the teaching that we have in all schools, this is never, that error is never perpetrated, that this is all that needs to be done. Having come to the end, to the eighth, our concern lies with getting into the first. And that is something that most people would want to do, but in order to do it, the wanting has to stop. What we can do to make the meditation successful is to make a determination. When one first sits down, to make a determination, I will not be deterred from my meditation subject. I'll stay on it. And every time I wander off, I'll be back. In other words, to make a determination not to be dreamy or get into any kind of hopes and prayers and future happenings or past remembrances, but have a real determination. I'll really do it this time. Then drop that too. And having aroused a feeling of contentment in oneself, happiness about the state of affairs as it is, keeping the mind tethered, so to say, not allowing it to play its usual games. Once it has learned to be tethered like this, it will stay naturally so. It doesn't actually enjoy those thinking games. It is quite bothered by them. It has a feeling of dukkha about it, all those thinking games that are going on. It doesn't have no enjoyment in them. So the mind is far happier if it can actually stay with the subject. Because even staying with the subject for a short while brings some peacefulness. If a little peacefulness is experienced, that feeling can be also an entry. The feeling of peacefulness which arises may be cultivated by keeping one's attention on it as long as possible. The easiest entry is what we have just done, getting the pleasant sensation and using that as one's focus. If we use the breath, there's nothing else to be done except staying on it. One of the helps we can have is to fill the body with breath, to fill it completely, and be aware of the sensation that arises when the body is full of breath, and then letting it come out again, realizing the sensation. There is a very pleasant sensation when the body is full of breath. So we can use that too. That's also a help in order to get into these states of absorption. Loving-kindness meditation is also another possibility, namely, by using the spiritual heart center, which we usually consider to be in the middle, and trying to feel the warmth that is in there and opening it up. Opening it, in other words, expanding it, making it far more open, getting a feeling of the warmth in there. That too is a sensation which can be used for the entry into the absorptions. The absorptions are the sukha way of practice, the pleasure way of practice. And the Buddha said, this is a pleasure I allow myself. They are the way of practice which makes it really almost impossible to fall off the practice. I say decidedly almost, because anything is possible. But it is extremely helpful. There are possibilities of gaining insight without going through the absorptions. It's more difficult, less pleasurable, easier to fall off the practice, and usually one should not be without a teacher, because there are too many pitfalls when it's done without the absorptions. The absorptions do keep one in a balanced state. So, loving kindness, opening up the heart, feeling the warmth, the fan-type sweeping, which we've just done, coming to the sensations, filling the body with breath, becoming aware of the sensation when the body is full of breath, making a determination, but not hoping for anything, not looking for anything, not expecting anything. Hoping, looking, expecting are all detrimental to concentration. We can only do one thing at a time. We can either hope and expect, or we can concentrate. So we must do the one which is necessary, that's the concentration. There is actually nothing to hope for anyway, there's nothing to expect. If we leave the mind alone and actually allow it to settle into and become one with the meditation subject, it will do what we are hoping it will do. The mind has that capacity. The mind has that ability, the mind has that as a natural progression once it is made to concentrate at least a little. And all the questions, all that which we are hoping to gain, we already carry within. So the whole of the path is a constant letting go. It's a letting go of all our preconceived notions, of our preconceived ideas, of our beliefs, viewpoints, standpoints. The more we can let go, the easier the whole thing is. And the same applies to the absorptions. The more we can let go of what we have heard, believed, and hoped for, of what we would like to get, of what where we would like to go, how we would like to do it, and just sit down and do it, the easier it is. And all the views we have, all the ideas, are all detrimental to the actual practice. We can pick all those views and ideas up again when we leave the hall and carry them around with us if we want. They are nothing but a burden. they make life difficult. Because of all our viewpoints, we're very burdened, and because of all these ideas that we have to take a stand. If we were to let go of all of that, we would find the truth within. It is one of the aspects, one of the qualities of an arahant, that he has no views. Having experienced the truth, there is no view. And another quality of an arahant is, although touched by worldly circumstance, never his mind is wavering. Stainless, sorrowless, and secure. His is the highest blessing. This is the Mangala Sutta, the Blessing Sutta. Sorrowless is no dukkha. Secure is no ego. And stainless is no defilements. So stainless, sorrowless and secure, he of course has the highest blessing. And having no viewpoints is one of the last lines of the Karaniya Metta Sutta, the Loving Kindness Sutta, where it says that if there is complete purification, then there are also no viewpoints. So if we detect viewpoints within, and we should be able to detect hundreds of them, but let's just detect a few, it is very helpful to drop them, at least for the time of meditation. Because only then will the meditation flourish. As I said, you don't have to throw them away if you're attached to them. Everybody's attached to their viewpoints. You can just keep them on the pillow beside you and pick them up again as you go out. But during meditation, and specifically at the beginning of meditation, no views how it should be done, no views how other people are doing it, no views what you want to attain with it, nothing. Just being there. And I think that was probably the reason and the cause why this girl I told you about, who had never done anything, had never heard anything, was able to do it. She had absolutely not a single view about the whole thing. She'd never heard anything before. And she had never even tried anything before. It is still, of course, quite an exception, but it is one of the factors which are very helpful to drop as much as we can. To get into the absorptions, we have to let go. We have to let go, and the thinking stops when we let go. When we let go of all the things that are important to us, then it stops. And maybe if we take a little time out to contemplate whether these things that are so important to us are, in an absolute sense, really important, maybe we will find that we can just as easily drop them. Because anything that is important to us and others will gain and be enhanced immeasurably if we ourselves, who are part of this important thing, cultivate our own liberation, or at least as much of it as possible. Whatever it is we're trying to do, it can only suffer if we keep on thinking and doing it in our mind. And it can only gain tremendously if we drop the whole thing and look after our own, our own growth, spiritual and emotional growth. So the more we can drop all these ideas that come to the mind, the easier it will be to eventually pick them up again and fulfill them in an entirely different manner. The absorptions are part of the transcendental dependent arising, and from now on, the next steps are the insight steps, where and how the insight can be aroused, and naturally the whole thing ends with liberation. So I will talk about these next steps at another time.